Hello and welcome to Circling the Cup, San Jose Sharks podcast episode number 151. And boy, if you're thinking we got a lot to talk about this week, what?
Yeah, what gave you that
Just
impression?
Kidding. Yeah, exactly. We do have some stuff though. I'm Alex here with me as always because we can't shake him loose is Ben. What's up, Ben?
Martin Jones' biggest fan. Let's do this.
Oh, someone's got a Joner. And of course, live via satellite once again because Elon Musk put the satellites back in the sky, I guess, or NASA maybe too, or the Russians or China. A lot of people probably have satellites up there. But Colin, what's up, Colin? Pregnant pause. would not be a show without that.
It's got to bounce to Mars and back before he gets it.
It's one of those great podcasts where I'm watching the last game while we podcast.
I secretly think that you're not in Sweden and that you're literally just on Erik Karlsson's couch. I imagine you're watching Siesta Beach or whatever that show is.
Winter started last week here. Everyone is bitter. So,
well,
we got snow after months and months.
Well, maybe this will warm your heart because the San Jose Sharks signed an extension this week. And that would be, I know who you're thinking. And it's not
who you
any
want.
Of those players. It depends on your feelings, but probably not the deal you want. And that is Schmeck gets a 4-year contract with a cap hit of $2,250,000 a year. Now, I know what you're thinking. Wait a minute. Hasn't he not played enough to earn that contract? Correct. Likely. Correct if you're normal. You might also be thinking the other side of it, which I was initially thinking before we saw the actual number, which is, don't the Sharks always have to go a little longer in term or higher in salary? Correct! Does that make this a good deal? No!
Has Alex
really.
Had too much coffee? Correct!
Well, yes. Sorry, another coffee podcast. So, but go ahead, Colin.
So if we don't sign Schmeck, where does he go back to? Because that's the thing that I think about. It's like, wait, we're paying you more than you're worth to stay in California, and if we don't pay you, you go back where?
Okay,
and you're not taking a discount. Come on, buddy.
Okay, let me throw out the one maybe logical reason behind this before we go into all the reasons why this probably isn't logical, and that is that. You know, with Dylan gone, the Sharks are obviously going to need to, and the defense not being particularly stellar this year, Sharks are going to need to address defense. And in this situation, this is probably, I think some of the logic is probably they know him and that he's a known quantity. Now you could go, not a good quantity, and that's fine. That's fair. But, you know, in some respects, they may be looking at it like, well, either we see something or again, better than the devil you know than the one you don't. Now, here's my problem with this trade, and I know, you know, you guys are going to have multiple equal problems with it. But one of the things that kind of gets me about this is, whether you have to sign longer term or not, my expectation would be longer term in some situations like this, a little bit lower on the contract, and that's kind of where you're making that juggle. But one of the things that freaks me out about it is we don't have a coach yet, and we don't know what our system is yet. So I'm not a huge fan of making 40-year deals or really, really, really making a lot of signings. It's not like DW can stand pat through the summer. My hope is that they're interviewing coaches now and then they get that situated before the draft and free agency. Because what I would like to see is I would like to see a situation where we bring in a coach that we believe in who's got a system that's going to work for the players that we currently have and then continue to filter in players that will better support that system. For me, I see this as like, you don't know what that system's going to be, or you're basically saying we're going to dictate what that system's going to be, which is not the way that I would approach things. But yeah, I mean, like, you know, a deal like this in general, like the cost is too high. There's all sorts of other issues with it, but especially for me right now, I look at it like, why this second and why not wait until you get a coach in to really evaluate things and then build towards what that coach's needs are. Ben, I know you're going to be super opinionated on this, so I'm going to kick
you.
I've got one
little observation to make.
Go ahead.
Jump into this. Couture comes back from his injury And in his first couple of games, he got some odd man rushes. And the other guy in that rush was Šimek. And every time you see Couture look up and just go, oh, yeah, not you, and shoot the puck. Like, he sees the pass, sees who the guy is like, yeah, not passing, shoots. And, I mean, it's a 2-on-0 or a 2-on-1. You need at least one pass there to shift the defense, shift the goalie. And Couture, having the hockey IQ he has, goes, yeah, no, I'm not giving this puck up to you. That's a bad idea. Mm. And yet the coach is like, yeah. Or sorry, the Wilson's like, yeah, I'm going to give this contract up to you. This is a good idea. It's like, whatever they're seeing from the press box is not being seen on the ice. So,
well, I'm not even sure it's the press box that's the problem. They you know, this team, I think, miscalculated his free agency appeal.
Yeah.
You know, I don't understand this signing on a number of levels. I don't understand this signing from the perspective of doing it now, as you say, Alex. It feels to me like the team kind of did this in a weird way where they looked at their roster for next year and they were like, all right, first left defenseman, that's Vlasic. We're paying him a lot of money. All right, third left defenseman, that's Mario Ferraro. We're not paying him anything, and he's cost-controlled. So we've got, I don't know, $2 million to throw at this. Let's just fucking do it. Let's do it and be heroes.
And that's like two players, potentially. That's the worst
part. The thing is that I have a whole bunch of concerns with extending Šimek, period, because he's played half a season that was good, had a horrible knee injury, and he's come back and not played particularly well since that knee injury. There's a lot of reasons that could be, but he, you know, if we think about how bad the Sharks D was last year, he was one of the bright spots on that D till he got hurt. But that he, you know, hasn't been the way things are here. And he's 27, so it's not like you're locking up a young guy. He's a physical guy. He's got a bum knee. Like, seriously, 4 years? Let's just start with term. What the fuck leverage did he have for you to give him 4 years?
Ah, Ben, I actually know the answer to this. And that is, for those who are fans of DW and not fans of DW, the one thing we've learned so far is DW will make three really crazy, amazing moves and then at least one baffling one, and this would be it. So he basically played his cards, Ben, I think, where he was like, okay, all right, the baffling one's due here. It's due.
You're saying this is deadline. Like some arcane deal with the devil where he has to, like, you know, pay some blood right every time he pulls off something amazing.
Maybe. I'm just saying Šimek listens to this podcast or listens to the podcast and goes, hey, these guys said he had a pretty good trade deadline, therefore he's due for a weird one. Maybe I can be it. So, I don't know. Just my thought.
I mean, the other thing that was weird about this signing, from my perspective, was that, you know, the alleged term started to leak a couple days before the deal was actually signed and was at a lower number. You know, it was 4 years, two per, which feels like, agent leaking to try to get a little bit more out of the team.
Bingo.
And hey, it worked, which, again, is like, who are you bidding against? Like, Šimek... Yep. Look, he's 27.
The Barracuda.
Right. I mean, prior to coming to the Sharks, the guy had played in the Czech League, right? Are you trying to tell me that really there's a team out there that is desperate to throw, I don't know, $2.5 million at this guy in free agency? And if so, why the fuck didn't you trade Šimek to that team for like two first rounders? I mean, it's I don't fucking get this at all. I don't get the term. I don't get the money. I don't get this, as you say. Like, why not wait till the end of the season? Why not wait till you've got a little bit more information? We've got, you know, another, you know, whatever number of games left to see if he rounds back into form. Are you really afraid that somebody's just again, like, banging down the door of this guy's agent to throw $3 million a year at this guy? I mean, look, two and a quarter is not the end of the world, I guess, is one takeaway, right? Like, if that's your second pair left defenseman and he's good, then that's not the end of the world. But we don't. Well, I think the issue is we don't know what he is.
Yeah, but yeah. Well. But and again, so let's look at a relative. Let's look at through the relative semi-handcuff. Contracts that we have on now, and again, I kind of come back around to,
right?
You don't have a coach, you don't have a system yet,
right?
So, and I don't think our current interim coach is going to be that. So, if you look at it just even from that perspective, you already got a bunch of guys that you got locked down that, you know, a coach is I'm sure a lot of coaches are probably actually pretty excited about a lot of those players, but in general, you know, those coaches to a degree are saddled with those players, and then you're just going to throw another one on that pile. It just doesn't make any sense to me. Like a wait and see approach would be more. And even if you thought another team might really, really, really have heavily scouted Shemek and believe that he's something, there's nothing about the way I've seen him play that doesn't seem replaceable.
Well, yeah, and we're going to see Tim Heed go to free agency. He's going to get like 2 years from some team, and he's going to go play well as a 7th D. And we're just going to sit there and go, Ryan 2.0.
The Heed ship sailed forever ago.
Oh, yeah. But I mean, it's because, it's because we like blasted it out to sea.
I mean, Ryan has not set the world on fire for the Kings, but the Kings are also awful.
But Ryan's played, like, they're playing him as like a 6th, 7th, and I mean, that's what he does. He's not supposed to set the world on fire. He's just supposed to, you know, defend the blue line and clear the puck out. And like, that's the same job Shimmick is supposed to do, and that's not a $2.2 million job. So it's nuts. Like, it also shows a complete lack of faith in anything we have in the system or any thought that we could pick something up in the free agency for a reasonable price.
I do think that, you know, another way to look at it is actually has to do with the system, because I don't hate Shemek personally. Obviously I don't hate any of the players personally, but you know, I think it's pretty fair to say right now that the Sharks don't immediately see or don't have confidence in the D immediately coming up or necessarily being ready. So if a D player wants to come up and challenge a camp, that's great. And the Sharks should be obviously looking at that, and they probably will, but they also, I think they had a bit of a reality check with their system. I know there was a great article on Fear the Finn with Doug Wilson Jr., but I think at the end of the day, you know, depending on what you want to believe, whether it was just PR or not, the Sharks really boosted this idea that the youngins were ready. And then they determined very quickly, right or wrong, that the youngins weren't ready. And that may also play a little bit into it, Colin, just because, you know, again, it's if you don't think those guys are ready at all, you got to put something in. Now, again, I don't think it has to be Shemek. I'm not justifying anything by saying that. But if you're looking for logic, that could potentially be another place to find it.
I mean, I look for logic in September, because that seems to be the place where it has the most likelihood of surviving.
I mean, here's the thing. You know, the Sharks, and again, I'm not justifying the Shemek thing at all, but I think a lot of what we'll talk about tonight and in the rest of the season, you know, again, the Sharks have talent on their roster. The question is, did that talent fall off a cliff, or is this an odd season and they just had trouble getting back into it? If you believe that this has just been a bad season, they've been having trouble getting back into it, and if they get a proper camp, proper coach, proper system in place, and have a proper offseason and proper camp again in preseason, that they'll bounce back, then some of what are perceived maybe as major holes won't necessarily be that. But we don't know that right now. We really don't know that right now. The Sharks ought to be and are, I think, right now with youth out of force, reevaluating some of that stuff. But if you do feel like most of the Sharks are going to bounce back when they get this thing, you know, after this offseason, then you could kind of see it as, well, everyone's down this year. Maybe that's why Shemek's not so great and in lotta, yada, yada. So there's a bunch of ways to look at it. We don't really know. But for what he's delivered so far, I don't think he's earned this contract.
Is Shemek supposed to be a McSorley? Like, is he there to protect talent?
I think it's a dumb job,
by the way, but
I don't really think that's the player he is, to be honest.
I mean,
certainly not to that extent.
He's a little physical, but he's not there to be an enforcer. He's not there to punch faces, right? So I see him as kind of being, you know, Brendan Dillon with a different accent to some extent, because, you know, he doesn't do much in the offensive zone. You know, he seems fairly positionally sound. You know, Dillon's obviously clearly better than him, but He's not driving play. He's not driving offense. He's not particularly mobile, and he's not exiting the zone, right? So this is a guy that is just 1,000% replaceable, and you're paying him 2.25 million a year, right? Like, I think for 4 years, and I honestly think you could get, you know, Brandon Davidson, who the Sharks brought over for nothing and are paying $700,000. I bet you could plug him into the lineup and he would do just as well as Schmeck.
Yeah, and hasn't that sort of been a storyline of the last half of the season? Is player goes out, new guy comes in, it's like, not half bad. Well, maybe we do have more options than we thought and back in November. So, yeah, like, spending this much money and not looking at everything we have in the cupboard first, it's the frustrating Doug Wilson.
And actually, to build on that, Alex, that's the thing. Like, if he was a right D, which the Sharks are a little short of depth-wise in their system, I kind of understand this more, because that's, you know, Heat is sort of the last right D in the on the, you know, big boy lineup at the moment, and everybody else who's right D is really you know, a bit away, like Merkley, and you know, they've been playing fucking Jeremy Roy at forward, for God's sake, on the CUDA, so he's not gonna save that. No, I mean, not consistently, but they've kind of moved him around trying to figure out what to do with him. So in that vein, like, why the fuck are you clogging up your salary cap with another left-handed D that is no better than a replacement level player at the moment? Like, could he totally heal up from the knee the rest of the year and be worth this money? Maybe, but could you also have waited to fucking see if that was so before giving him $2.25 million?
I just don't see any, I've yet to see any evidence.
Yeah.
That the potential for him to be a surprise, especially at 27, is there. I mean, maybe again, we're not evaluating on the daily. We're not in practices. We're not seeing all the same things that they're seeing. We're not professional scouts, but it doesn't seem to pass the eye or the stat test.
Yeah.
So you got to wonder what it is specifically that they're looking at.
Oh, I mean, it's not even like we're cap rich and we're trying to get to the floor. Like, it makes no sense in any direction. At best, you could do this this amount for a year or 2 years is like a weird kind of expensive bridge contract. But like, to have it be too much money for too long time to fail on both ends of the contract is it doesn't make me hopeful for free agency.
Well, it doesn't leave much space for free agency. I mean, this is, I don't know. I don't know how you make this deal in a world where you've got so much money committed to Burns and Vlasic, you know, two guys who are on the downside of their careers, plus then also Carlson. Like, I just don't get it. You've got to, I mean, with that top heavy a defensive lineup, you have got to be only spending, you know, entry level money for the rest of your D, or you're just creating bigger problems. So.
And let's remember that Melker is going to get extended.
Oh, God, like, damn it.
Like, I don't think so.
Colin,
I don't think so.
You know what? Fuck
he
you.
He shouldn't be.
I rage quit.
I want him gone. I want him gone. But
I don't think that's so. Not where although, we're living. I don't think so. Although I will say that this move does not inspire that confidence.
I mean, it shows, for one thing, that they didn't learn anything from signing Melker to 3 years and $2 million per. Like, they learned nothing from that. You know, and by the way, Melker was 26, 27 when they did that shit. So, God damn it.
It's a trend. And, like, that's the thing. It's like, and does Melker get a raise?
Well, like, that's funny. Also, fucking die. But also, what's funny is, you know, our favorite not journalist out there has already sort of floated out there. What if Melker was willing to come back for, I don't know, $1 million a year? I bet the Sharks do that.
That's still an overpay.
Yeah, totally. And also doesn't solve any problems because Melker's bad and it's time to move on from bad players. But anyway, we've talked about Melker enough.
Yeah. Well, I think the disease our organization has is, they put way too much faith in almost good. It's like, oh, if he can just put this together, he'll be great. It's like, he hasn't put it together in 5 years. let's move on. So it hurts so much.
Well, well as you
know, moving on.
Yep.
We don't need to dwell on this thing any more than we already have. Yeah.
Ooh, wait. What does LeBanc get?
The shaft.
Well, no, but like he's like he hasn't been.
He gets
been
arbitration, is what he gets.
Yep, oh, exactly. Does that come out in our favor?
Because they just base it off of his $1 million salary.
Yeah, that was the unfortunate gamble that he made. He's going to get burned by that.
Yeah.
Listen, we don't really want to. We're not going to focus too much on the games this week, or probably for the end of the season if we haven't picked up on that. But we do have a few questions, and I want to start with the fun one. And by the fun one, I mean I want to wind Ben up to go on a 20-minute rant to close the podcast, and that is one of our listeners, AJ Chichi. Wrote, with the anticipated salary cap increase to about 84 to 88.2 million, which positions do you see Dougie throwing money at? Now, if you don't know what he's referring to, well, it came up this week that might be where the cap is going. Ben, you want to walk us through why that's not going to happen?
The cap? So this week we had the GM meetings, right? And the first thing they were talking about was whether they were going to ruin one of the best stories that can happen every 20 years in the league, which is when an emergency backup goalie wins a game against the Leafs. But then after that, they leaked out, sort of what they thought of as the cap for next year,
right.
Which shocked everybody by being projected somewhere between 84 million and 88 and a half, right? Is that the numbers we saw?
Wow, no way.
No way, because this is not the first time that the league has put out a number that people have gone like, wait, really? And also for the last 2 years when they've done that, they've actually hit the minimum of that range at best, right? So this, I could go off on a rant here that this is never going to happen. They're certainly never going to hit the high end. That's even before we factor in the fact that everybody's going to be dead in like 3 months. So who's going to be going to hockey games?
You're so optimistic.
Wow, doom and gloom, man. See, why can't we just look at this as propaganda to make the Toronto fans happier? Because it's like, oh, if it goes up 5 million, all our stupid contracts look pretty good.
No. Spend.
You just talked about the Sharks there.
Put ourselves back in this position.
Hey, I'm trying to cheer myself up. Let me poop on Toronto a little bit.
So the way things have gone the last couple of years is, you know, the cap number gets out there, and that's sort of based on revenue projections, right? And then after that, you've got to take into account that the Players Association has to sort of agree on sort of a percentage boost, and they keep, you know, they take into account things like, what's that going to do to escrow? And they've been paying a ridiculous amount of their salaries into escrow for the last few years just to keep the cap kind of creeping up, right? So even taking that into account, there doesn't seem to be any reason why the Players Association would want to push towards that high end, right? They haven't for the last couple of years. They're fucking tired of this escrow shit. But also, how could revenues possibly be so up so much that the minimum jump would be $3.5 million? I just call immediate bullshit on that, personally.
Yeah. Especially when the playoffs haven't even started, and with the just chaotic nature of the standings, like there are no good stories being built in the league right now because everything is just scattershot everywhere.
There's marketable stories there. I just think you got to look at a couple of realities here, right? So the NHL at one point in time had this belief that they were a little bit bigger than they actually were, not in terms of revenue, but in terms of where their place was within the major sports within the U.S. They got a really rude awakening, and this led to one of the lockouts. There are certainly factors. I'm not disagreeing fully with you, Colin. There's always stories that you can market if you've got a halfway decent marketing department,
which they don't.
And there are really true, and there are good stories there. But I think right now you're looking at a situation. Ben, you touched on it with where you know, the big scare right now, the coronavirus and all that stuff is going on. You've got, you know, Santa Clara basically saying, hey, don't go to Sharks games. Not Sharks specifically, but, you know, don't go to big public events. So fortunately for the Sharks, they're not making the playoffs. So it's not like they're losing a lot there. But, you know, that is something that's going to affect things. But again, you know, the bigger thing here is that the players don't have the incentive to boost that high.
Yeah.
So, but here's the thing. Here's the thing that I do that I do think is worth talking about with this question. And that's the root of the question, which we've talked about a little bit, but it's worth talking about again. And that's, which positions do you see Dougie really throwing money at?
What money?
Wait. Well, yeah, what money? And can we do a quick sort of round on what positions we think need filling versus what we think he's going to throw money at? Because those two things have been historically very different.
I don't necessarily think let's change the word money there and look at it from more of the perspective of, what do you think the priority roles or positions are that DW is going to be focused on? And then, you know, whether he's got the money to or how much money to, that's a little bit of a different story.
I don't think it is. I'll be honest. No, because like, so what, how much money is really coming off the cap is first question, right? And, or I mean, it's like coming off the roster, right? How many of these guys does the team really not try to re-sign or tender or what have you? And, you know, I think we all know that Jumbo probably is going to try to come back. Marlowe's probably going to try to come back. Sure. The team might put money on Melker. So if that's all handles, there's sort of the $4 million that the Sharks kind of have coming off for UFAs that they might not want to re-sign, kind of already covered, right? Maybe leaving another couple million, right? If the team doesn't try to re-sign Heed and maybe doesn't make a run at Melker. And I don't trust any of that shit, right? Because, first of all, Tim Heed seems to be a masochist, so he'll apparently come back and not be played just because he enjoys it. And this team thinks Melker is good on the PK, so they're going to probably throw money at him.
And we still have to sign Nason and Sumela. So, Sumela's coming, well, probably.
Yeah. Anyway, so I think we all agree the weakness is probably on the wings.
Yep.
Yeah.
Not to the Red Wings, they're also weak, but, you know, on the wings. The real question is, how much money would the team really even have to do something there? You know, the last time they tried to fix a weakness on the wings, we got a $4 million deal for Michael Bodker that did nothing, right?
Oh, God.
Before that, it was a veteran like Joel Ward for a couple million, and that one was fine, but... Alex, it gets back to your question. Where is this team headed? What are they going? What do they think next year is going to be about? So I could see them trying to make a $3 or $4 million free agent acquisition on the wing, like a young guy who actually sucks, like Bodker, and thus is affordable. But I don't know that anything you get on the free agent market actually would have a positive impact on this team. To me. Unless the team figures out what to do with either a Jones, a Burns, or a Vlasic, I don't think see this team making big moves at all in free agency.
Oh, actually, does anyone still think they're going to buy out Jones in the offseason?
Well, I mean, that's a separate question.
I think that ship sailed.
Yeah, we have that as a separate question. I think Ben, the team has made it fairly clear, at least to me, that they think that this is a fluky season. They're going to bounce back. Now, again, I think for me, as important as it is filling those weak positions somehow, for me, it's really more the coaching hires. Like,
yeah,
the biggest thing here.
I agree.
If you get a coach who has a system that works for these players or can adjust to these players or build it, however you want to look at it, then I believe, again, and I keep saying this, I think there's a lot of talent on this team, and I think mentally they got pulled out of it. They've struggled to get back into it, and I think that enough of those players can bounce back well enough so that they can at least be competitive again. And I think the team banks on that too. But here's the thing: if they don't make the right hire, then they're kind of going to be in a similar position to where they are now. So that to me is really the more important element. I think the first thing, like, I'm not even paying attention to signings. I mean, I am, but like, you know, again, the Shemek thing, I look at it and I'm like, why is that even the focal point, right?
Yeah.
Now? shouldn't be at all. The focal point should be finding and identifying and getting that coach in. And when I'm going to say ASAP, but I don't mean rush it. I just mean, like, you got to have that in place so that you know what you're building for. You know what I mean? Yeah. And for me, I don't think you can make a great assessment without that.
I think secondarily, the most important thing for the Sharks to do is to figure out what the subtractions they're going to make are.
Yeah.
And that gets back to the question of, you know, do they continue to waste money on Martin Jones, or do they try to extend Dell or find somebody starter quality on the market that isn't going to cost, you know, $6 million a year? Second,
Do they need a starter, though, or do they just need a B goalie?
I mean, I don't know. I don't. Given that this team probably isn't Stanley Cup capable next year, I think an A-B tandem and see if one of them is, you know, is going to surprise you is fine. But you certainly don't need to be spending $6 million on Martin Jones. And above and beyond that, I think the biggest subtraction that might be an addition this team could make would be moving either Burns or Vlasic. You do that, and then all of a sudden you've got room to, you know, maneuver in the free agent market.
Yep. Assuming who's your choice between those two?
I'd move Burns.
Okay.
Yeah, even though, I agree.
I mean, he has played a little bit better of late. He's older and dumber, and you can put a good mobile guy with Vlasic and keep Vlasic afloat just on his smarts. But you can't keep Brent Burns afloat on his smarts because he doesn't have any. So
I think Burns also still has enough perceived value.
Yes, that too.
In a marketplace where you can actually get a halfway decent return, or probably a good return if you play your cards right with it. So
totally,
I see that. You know, that's again, like when I look at this trade deadline. Look, I love Burns's fun-loving, idiotic personality. I get a kick out of it, but at the same time, he's such a big defensive liability, and that contract is so big, and they already have the other contracts. That to me, I would have him being the most tradable and potentially bringing back the best possible assets. That's the direction that I would have, preferred to go. If you could,
yeah, if you can. I mean, that's the thing. He does definitely has more value because of the two of them. He's the one who's won a Norris.
Right. And like, there's still the fact that he does have a wicked shot. He just can't aim, or rather, he can't aim around skating legs.
And to that point, this team I think is better off when it's not trying to force the puck back to a shooter on the point.
Yes.
And as long as you have Burns back there, just begging to take shots, and that being his kind of strongest offensive contribution, you're kind of hurting yourself, right?
Yeah, I agree. Well, that's the thing. When you look at one of the failures of the system, of the previous system, of DeBoer's system, one of the big ones was, you know, initially when Burns still had that surprise factor and we had Pavel, someone who could chip pucks in front, that strategy worked a little bit, but then it became so insanely telegraphed. You knew if Burns was on the ice, the Sharks were basically going to cycle it until they could give it to him to just rifle and hope someone would get a rebound or Pavelski would chip it in. And it got to a point where, like, I don't think the Sharks can continue to run with that strategy even under a new coach.
No, I agree. And it's sort of annoying to have to have it be such a set pattern behavior for the organization that the only way to break the habit is to get rid of Burns. Like that sort of inflexible approach it's just been horrible to watch this season. And it's been frustrating, and I've been on Team Blow It Up for the last few months. So I understand that I'm in the wrong place to try to make rational choices about what to do.
Yeah. Yep.
On the what do we need to fill? Do either of you feel like we have one complete forward line?
Oh, of course.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, when guys are healthy, I mean, Hurdle, Kane, Couture is as good as any line, or you could throw Timo on that.
But okay, so
that's not even a question. Kane, I think Couture, what you really want to ask is Timo. Do they have two? complete forward lines. Yeah,
like we don't have a top six and we don't have a bottom six.
Well, we do. Yeah, you're it's just not
good.
You know, going to win you a lot of games. I mean, again, like part of my frustration in evaluating this team continues to be that we don't actually know still, honestly, what this, you know, when we take the entire, you know, 50-man roster or whatever, or, you know, the contract, yeah, yeah. I still don't know, like, which of these guys might actually be capable of playing, you know, top six or bottom six. I mean, I think that Noah Gregor probably has a shot at being middle six and solid in that role. I think we've learned that maybe over the last couple months, maybe just the last month. And that's the thing, right? Like, we could have figured that earlier if DeBoer wasn't a dipshit. Right. So who else has kind of been left behind because they haven't been given an opportunity to grow at this level? I mean, honestly, I've liked a lot of what I've seen from most of the young guys who have played in the bottom six. I like actually what Nason brings to the table. I'd give Nason a Sorensen deal and see if he can continue to drive play. I mean, unlike Sorensen, he does actually seem to drive play a little bit.
And people in our Discord have pointed out that, you know, Nason's lacking a shot. But he seems to kind of be aware of this. Like, he seems to be trying to set plays up for other people to fill in.
Yeah.
And, like, I really, really like True on the fourth line.
I do, too.
I liked him in preseason. And, yeah, the guy needs to pick his skating up a bit. And reports are that's the hardest thing to improve. But one way for a guy to improve is to just get the ice time at the NHL pace.
Right. And that's the thing, like, you know, if you went back 2 years when the team just kind of added True to the Barracuda roster, like, he was a nobody and played like a nobody in the beginning. True has taken steps forward at every opportunity at every level. So if there's a guy I would trust to go work on his skating in the offseason and come back and be a more complete player, given the growth he's shown, it's True. Like, that's a guy you have to give a shot to you know, to do that. I think like he's done it so far. Why not? There's a bunch of guys on this roster who have not made those steps, given opportunities, you know, and we should be asking the other question, which is why do they keep getting those opportunities over other folks? Right. But beyond that, like we'll just have to take stock in another 3 weeks. What's been going on with the Cuda and what's been going on with the guys. Cause you know, some of those guys we thought were going to be here have been hurt a bunch of the year, you know, and are just now kind of starting to get more opportunity to play top line Cuda minutes. So, you know, we could have a different perspective in 3 weeks too, as to who should be sort of competing for those roles in camp, rather than, you know, again, like giving minutes and time to people who really the Sharks really just need to bid farewell to. So,
yeah. Ben, other questions you caught?
In terms of like, on like Twitter or whatever?
Or... Yeah, on the tweets. On the tweets.
You know, I'm thinking back to stuff we've talked about. You know, there's been not a lot of questions around. I honestly think part of the problem is like nobody really knows what the organization thinks the future is. For sure. I mean, I really did like that DW Jr. went on the record as to some of the things they were hoping for that didn't happen, the things they were, you know, thinking would happen and didn't. And I think we do need to recognize that, you know, a significant amount of talent on this team has been lost to injury this year. You know, we did spend a couple of months just, you know, basically wasting time on a coach who sucks. And now we've wasted maybe a little bit more time on a coach who's not going to be our long-term coach. But, you know,
I do hope.
The injuries at least have forced the organization to give some guys more time and more looks that maybe they wouldn't have otherwise. So there is, I guess, kind of a silver lining to that. But, I, you know, there's not going to be some magic, you know, $5 or $6 million we have to throw it. A good player. So I feel like we need to prepare for the Sharks to just, you know, tender a few guys, bring back a couple guys, and treat next year is a do-over, which I'm not sure that's the right call, but I think that's what's going to happen.
Yeah, I agree. Well, and again, if you read into everything the org is saying, that seems to be what they're indicating.
Yeah. The other question I think has been is Martin Jones fixed?
I don't think you can make a call like that this soon.
So I would, how about looking at it this way? Is Nabokov's time with him having an impact? I kind of feel it is.
But how could you even evaluate that?
Well, he seems to be a little more settled in his positioning. I feel like I'm seeing something change in his play. Like he's not that sort of cold killer that he was back when we thought he was good, back when Alex and I thought he was good while Ben was screaming league average. But I feel like I'm seeing something there. Am I seeing 5 million cap space worth of something? No. But I think Nabokov's having an impact. Can he flip Jones all the way back around by next season? I don't know, and it's still not worth the $5 million to find out. So, I hope we buy him out. I hope we just, as we're saying, go to an AB format and just hope something good happens. Because goalies get hot. Goalies grow in weird ways, and until we are figuring out the rest of our roster, I think having that massive contract in our net just makes no sense.
I just think it's way too small a sample size. And I think maybe Nabokov or someone has gotten him to understand, like in some respects, the pressure of making the playoffs is off probably. Now he's still got to, reprove himself and still fighting to keep that job and all that stuff. But I just think too small a sample size to really make a call on that. And I, one of the questions that I got on the side was actually we may have even gotten this on the Discord. I'm not quite sure, but, does Martin Jones' performance merit his continued role in goal? And that was from Illuminato. And if you're talking about for the rest of the season, I would say, look, the Sharks probably have a pretty good idea right now, whether or not they would consider re-signing Dell. And whether or not they should is a separate question. They know that right now, contractually, they're committed to Jones unless they were to do a buyout. So on the one hand, you kind of want to be cool and help Dell get at least get another job if you're not going to re-sign him, even though you don't want to benefit another team. But at the same time, I think I wouldn't be shocked to see a little bit more of the focal point go back over to Jones, just because
it kind of has.
Yeah.
So then is there a scenario where Coronar is our backup next season?
No, I don't think Coronar is an NHL goalie. I'm sorry. I really don't. And I don't understand the fascination with him. Like, I've seen him play multiple times. And I'm not saying he's bad or anything. But like, I remember people before saying, or Coronar, that they could be, they could be the starting goalie and all this stuff. And I got to tell you, man, like watching some CUDA games, watching camp, like I don't personally see it. At least not in the next year, certainly. So, and I don't think the org does either. But
I mean, his save percentage is kind of garbage for AHL.
Well, this year, the AHL team's kind of garbage. So, I'm just being realistic, right? It's like with the Sharks right now. Like you look at a lot of stuff and you go, well, that guy's really down. Well, a lot of the Sharks are really down. So the question, what the team has to figure out is how much of that is the team scenario and how much of that is where's the player's actual potential. But I personally haven't seen anything out of him that makes me think that, he's ready to come up and be. Yeah, I certainly don't think he's ready to be a tandem goalie if that's what the Sharks are going to be trying to do with Jones next season. And I certainly don't think he's a starter. And I'm pretty mum on whether or not I even think he's a backup right now at this point at that level. So
I think
if you're banking on that, I don't think I got to be honest. Going back into the prospect scrimmage, right? I think my report coming out of the prospect scrimmage was basically Noah Gregor, Noah Gregor, Noah Gregor, Noah Gregor, Noah Gregor. In fact, I actually think that's literally what it was. And then I pointed out that I of the watching the goalies in that, I thought I like Shortridge's positioning, but he's nowhere near NHL ready either. I don't really think the Sharks right now have a NHL goalie ready in that system for the next couple of years.
I mean, we should
always check the Zamboni driver, see if he's any good.
I totally agree with you on that. That I don't think the Sharks would elevate one of these guys because they want to. I think the more likely scenario is kind of, I don't think any of us really saw Dell kind of coming in and being the backup for the Sharks either, even though he'd had a pretty okay year, but he'd been competing with, you know, another player. I don't remember who the other goalie was in those years anymore because I'm an old man, but it's not like he'd blown us away at the AHL level. You know, just because of cap space, you know, and depending what the Sharks are able to do, I wouldn't be shocked if either they had to make a really cheap signing, you know, a league minimum signing for a guy, or just decided to eat an ELC and put one of these guys in the backup.
And I guess that's the thing for me though, Ben, is that, so what it really comes down to, I think, is what are you doing with Dell here? Or what are you doing with Jones here?
Right.
If you're going to buy out Jones, and I think it's a different scenario, if you're not going to buy out Jones, then I would not personally be comfortable having the two goalies be Jones and someone from the system right now. I would much prefer they find a backup that they can sign that's a little bit more, you know, NHL ready or tested in this scenario. Now, if they're going to buy out Dell and somehow get something else in that's, you know, they know is going to be a reliable starter, then maybe I would change my tune a little bit, but I don't think they can do that if it's Jones, unless Jones somehow has a miracle offseason.
Right. So I don't disagree with you from the perspective of should they in any way, shape, or form, right, Alex? I mean, my point is that, you know, they've got a lot of things they're going to probably want to do this offseason, and they're not going to have as much cap as they're going to want to, you know, barring a miracle. And so, you know, you're entering a situation where you're looking around at a goalie market and you want to keep it cheap, but anybody who could be a functional backup for an NHL team probably is going to have at least one other suitor, right? Yeah. So do they end up just hogtied in a place where they end up having to give Sochenko or Coronar that position and pray that Nabby can have the impact that they would hope he can? That's kind of what I'm saying, right?
Like, bad scenario.
It is. It's terrible, particularly if that means that Jones is the starter. Because if he's not and you've got that extra money, then you go out and you can probably find somebody mid-range for the same money you're paying Dell who might be good as Dell, right? Or right. Maybe hopefully a little bit better.
Is the goalie market, is what a team is willing to spend on a goalie impacted by last year's Bobrovsky signing, considering that he's getting 10 million and, like, that's... Like, he's not living up to that contract in a big way. And you have teams sort of thinking, oh, I don't want to go and dump a bunch of money on a guy who's going to just Bobrovsky me.
I mean, that's fucking Florida being Florida. So
yeah.
I can see the goalies asking for more money based on that contract, but I don't see anybody else being dumb enough to sign a contract like that. And the Sharks aren't going for a Bobrovsky, right? Like, they're not looking for a guy who was a starter somewhere to give him $5.5 million because... That's a loser proposition.
We already did that.
Yeah, that's a loser proposition.
I think most. If you look back historically, I think most GMs have identified what we've pointed out in the past, which is that there's a glut of league average goalies that can be signed for a reasonable price. And so there's always a goalie who's got a great contract. Sometimes it's because they're a legitimate great goalie. Sometimes it's because they aren't. But I think across the board, There's enough goaltenders to go around. Like, that's one of those positions where, like, it's a tough position to play for sure, and it's a tough position to scout and figure out and grow for sure. But at the same time, you can. There's more low risk options or low cost options in that position than say a lot of others. Strictly because there's less jobs available there than there are some of the other ones. So I mean, I don't see why any team would feel the need to do that. Unless they saw a goaltender they really, 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 really believed. And I think that's what happened with Bobrovsky, was you know, there was a team there, and a couple of teams, I'm sure, that really, 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 really bought into what he could bring to the table. But again, that's not the norm. That's more the exception. So I don't know. But yeah, I wouldn't feel comfortable with that scenario if Jones is in it. And again, I hope Jones has a full game recovery and goes back to being good or league average and then okay, great in the playoffs. But I would be pretty nervous about a scenario where we've got someone out of the system pulled up just to kind of backfill that backup when we don't even when our starting goaltending is pretty shaky. I don't think that ends well for the Sharks. That's my 2 cents. Gents, there were some games this week we got to talk about. I know we had other questions, but I'm sure they will pop back up. The San Jose Sharks, they played some games. They they surprised everyone by beating the Pittsburgh Penguins by a score of 5-0. Welcome back, Patty.
I like them apples. It turns out he was the problem. I tried to tell everybody.
And then just when you think win streak, Sharks beat Toronto by a score of 5-2. Hey, Toronto, how you like them apples? I'm going to say that up to every team we beat at this point, given all the injuries and the situation we're in. And then they would lose to the Minnesota Wild by a score of 3-2. Now, guys, before I talk about the games for the next couple weeks in the standings, three stars of the week. Oh, it was a hard one. So, Colin, you get to go first.
Oh, God. No, I can't go. I have no stars anymore. There are no stars.
All right, Ben. I know you got some stars hidden.
Yeah, all right. So I'm going to give my third star to Antti Suomela, who got his first goal of the year in the Toronto game, I think. I'm going to give my clap, second...
Clap.
Huh?
That's a clap, 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 clap.
Okay, great. Thanks. Yes. I'm going to give my second star to Joe Thornton, who twice this week scored the first of what could have been four goals, but didn't quite make it. But anytime that guy's scoring goals, I'm happy. I'm going to give my first star of the week to Radim Šimek's agent for just bending the Sharks over a barrel we didn't even know was there, and extracting maximum value. So good job, Šimek's agent. You win this week.
Yeah, I'll go, Colin. I'm going to give my third star to the Sharks for beating the Pittsburgh Penguins by a score of 5-0.
Even you're cheating your bullshit three stars thing now.
Well, listen, we admitted before that the rest of the season, the three stars are probably going to be pretty heavy bullshit. So I think we already get a pass there. My second star goes to Šimek's agent. I agree with you, Ben. And my first star goes to Šimek. You get that money. You get that money. Look, man. Hey, thumbs up. If I'm in your position, I take that deal every time too. Can't blame me for it. Colin, I hope by now you've had 1 second to come up with three stars and or rip off the others three stars.
So my third star is going to the team that signs Nason in the offseason.
Fucker.
my second star is going to Ben's rage when we have not gotten rid of any of our heavy contracts and we've re-signed Melker to a...
I'm not going
to
be angry.
Why do you keep jinxing this team?
I'm not going to be angry. I'm just going to go be a Seattle fan. It's fine.
You turncoat.
And Thornton can get my first star because
he's Jumbo.
Because he's Jumbo. And at $2 million, he's still worth more than most of our deadbeat contracts.
I feel bad that none of us gave a star to the org for doing the pretty classy Make-A-Wish thing this week, too.
Oh, yeah, that was pretty cool. But Colin might not have seen it yet because it was largely today.
I know. He lives in the future and yet somehow in the past at the same time. Truly remarkable how
I'm a man out of time.
Listen, the Sharks got some games this week if you're still watching. Tomorrow they take on the Ottawa Senators at home. Then Sunday, because back-to-backs, why the hell not? They play the Colorado Avalanche also at home. Then Wednesday they take on the Chicago Blackhawks in Chicago. Friday, they got St. Louis as the first of a back-to-back because we're back to the back-to-backs. Saturday, they will also take on Dallas. I'm only bringing that up because back-to-back. Back-to-back.
Back-to-back.
Right now, back-to-back.
Back-to-back.
Back-to-back. They got the Pacific numbers, words. Sharks are seventh in the Pacific right now. They got 62 points. Just ahead of them are Anaheim at 64. And then, woo, about 10 points up. is the Arizona Coyotes in fifth place. And of course, right below the Sharks in eighth place are the Los Angeles Kings. And by the way, Ben, what's your favorite Pacific stat of the week? You had one before the
podcast. Oh, it was that, yeah, that we swept Toronto, that California swept Toronto, the worst state in hockey right now, swept yeah. Toronto. Yeah, suck it, Tavares. Exactly. You fucker.
Ouch. And yes. Oh, wait. I have a different star. I'm giving a star to Tampa for tanking the rest of their season and giving us a top 20 pick. For Goodrow.
My whole thing for the rest of the year is make Ottawa's pick worse. So hashtag make Ottawa's pick worse, Sharks.
Yep. My whole thing for the rest of the season is Noah Gregor. Because I like Noah Gregor.
Alex True.
Well, I mean, I like him too, but I can't. Like, I got to pick one, man. I got to pick one. Listen, that concludes this week's podcast. You can subscribe to us on iTunes and the podcast app. You Android people, go figure it out. Oh, Ben's going to say go to Spotify, where I'm going to say we get no royalties.
Don't do it.
You can check us out on the web at circlingthecup.com. You can also check us out at Facebook at facebook.com/circlingthecup. And of course, you can check Ben out on Twitter at @circlingthecup, where he posts the Discord. We have a Discord channel. We do chat. I know it seems a little less active, Discord people. It's not because we aren't paying attention. We do. We talk constantly. It's just we're not live casting the games as much because the games.
Yep.
Yeah. Oh, well, listen, guys, this has been fun as always, and I do hope to see the Sharks' little upward swing, I guess. Continue, Jones, continue. But for now, why don't you say bye-bye?
Make Ottawa's pick worse.
Bye-bye.